The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network. www.theflypod.com.
At midnight on January 16, 1920, the lights went out in saloons all over America. The 19th Amendment, better known as the Volstead Act, had taken effect, and for the next 13 years, alcoholic beverages were against the law throughout the United States. Actually, Indiana had already gone dry in 1918. In Dearborn County, prohibition threatened more than a person's right to drink. With several large distilleries and a brewery in operation, prohibition threatened the livelihood of a large portion of her citizens. The biggest loser in the days immediately after the Hoosier version of prohibition took effect was the Big Garnier Brewery in Newtown of Lawrenceburg. In October of 1918, under the direction of Deputy Collector E.P. Gooden, the equivalent of 570 barrels of beer were dumped into Tanner's Creek. In June, Victor Oberding, the owner-manager, had advertised the brewery and its ice plant for sale, offering it for less than the cost of the ice machines. The brewery had been owned and managed by members of the Garnier family and their descendants since 1855. With ample warning that the national deadline was approaching, the major local distilleries made plans to salvage at least some of their business, even as they laid off many of their employees. Some 30 government storekeeper gaugers also lost their jobs when prohibition became official. The huge Rossville distillery became producers of non-beverage alcohol, industrial chemicals, pharmaceuticals, and distillers' dried grain, but not until they had laid off at least one-fifth of their workforce. Owned by the O'Shaughnessy family, the Rossville plant had already begun its new operation in 1920, and just before the deadline, they were able to announce a 10% bonus for their remaining employees. In addition, they began remodeling some of their buildings for other uses, including one on 2nd Street in Lawrenceburg, which became the quarters for the U.S. Overall plant, run by Henry Smarr. At least 80 women would be required to run the machines. At Greendale's Squibb Distillery, the family had been selling off much of its holdings, some of which went to the Nutritia Company, a large feed and grain manufacturer. They sold one of their buildings to the Schultz Oakland Motor Company and leased one building to the Valerio Clothing Factory. But it was the sale of the alcohol already in their warehouse to a drug company that brought trouble. The building was actually leased by one of the country's most notorious bootleggers, George Remus of Cincinnati. Remus was a lawyer who had grown up in Chicago and who immediately saw the chance to take advantage of loopholes in the Volstead Act, in particular the one which allowed the sale of alcohol for medicinal purposes. Long before the act took effect, he began buying up distilleries in and around Cincinnati and setting up his various drug companies. The flamboyant Remus, thought by many to have been the model for F. Scott Fitzgerald's Great Gatsby, was not satisfied with the profits he could make by obtaining legal permits to sell the alcohol for medicinal purposes. He began bottling and moving large quantities of whiskey from the Squibb plant, and according to some biographers, even planned hijackings against his own trucks to cover up his involvement. He had paid off countless government agents and politicians, and felt relatively safe from prosecution. But it was one of the hijackings that finally led to his downfall. The thieves were traced to a farm in Delhi where Remus operated a warehouse and distribution facility for thousands of bottles of whiskey. On October 4, 1921, Dearborn County Sheriff Julius Swing and federal agent W. O. Holman served a search warrant at the Squibb plant in Lawrenceburg, where they found 925 cases of whiskey. Federal officials in Indianapolis soon stepped in and confiscated the whiskey, and further charges were brought against Remus and 13 other people in federal court in Cincinnati. Among the witnesses against him was Robert Squibb, who still had an office in plain view of the facility that Remus now controlled. Squibb told the court that he had noticed an extreme amount of bottling activity and large shipments being trucked out of the plant. In May of 1922, all of the defendants were found guilty, and Remus was sentenced to 2 years in prison. He pulled every political string he could, but eventually he ran out of appeals, when the United States Supreme Court ruled against him, and he reported to the federal prison in Atlanta, Georgia. Now the story becomes truly bizarre, as Remus's wife allegedly became romantically involved with Franklin Dodge, the federal agent responsible for his arrest. Remus was finally released from prison, convinced that the pair had stolen nearly all of his assets, and on the day his divorce from his wife was to be heard in court, he shot and killed her. He was found innocent by reason of insanity at the time of the shooting, but then used the fact that the government had argued that he was perfectly sane to win his early release from a mental institution. George Remus lived out his life in relative obscurity in Covington, Kentucky. Meanwhile, with the big-time operators out of the way, local law enforcers turned their attention to the small-time players to be found all over Dearborn County. Dozens of people were arrested for producing and selling moonshine, many of them with names still recognizable today. Sometimes the arrests came almost by accident. In one case, a couple of men got into a fight over a woman, and one shot and killed the other. When police arrived with prosecutor Crawford Hap Peters, they also found a barrel of corn mash and a moonshine still. They immediately arrested the owner of the property, who had not been involved in the original fight. In another, Lawrenceburg police and the sheriff's department raided a farm on the Guilford Road near Homestead and found 100 bottles of homebrew. The owner was arrested, but police returned later in the day for a more thorough search and came up with more potent moonshine as well. The owner was taken to Lawrenceburg Mayor's Court, where he's fined and given a 30-day suspended sentence. Many of those arrested never came to trial at all after their charges were dismissed for various reasons, and in some others, juries found them innocent, although the jail sentences were also numerous, but usually quite short. Moonshining was so widespread and accepted in Dearborn County that I was once told a story about it by Lillian Cook. Lil and her husband operated a filling station on Ridge Avenue in Greendale. At the time, that was the main route out of town. She said they could always tell who was involved with illegal whiskey making by the fact that those people would be carrying huge bags of sugar in the backs of their cars when they stopped for gas, and they made absolutely no effort to conceal their cargo. Aside from the major operation of George Remus, the Prohibition years may have brought mostly small-time raids on bootleg and homebrew camps and individual entrepreneurs, but they also brought death and tragedy. A year after it went into effect, there was a holdup and hijacking of a truckload of whiskey, which ended in the death of driver Matt Schuler of Aurora, and serious injury to former police officer Frank Junker, who had gone along as guard. As Junker told the story, the truck had been loaded with 20 casks and barrels and 20 cases of whiskey. Near E-Town in Ohio, they were met by a carload of armed bandits who demanded that they unload their cargo. A furious gun battle followed, during which Junker was hit several times and Schuler was killed. Four men were arrested for the crime, all of them from Cincinnati. In December of 1929, a Dearborn County sheriff lost his life. Herman Lang had been called to a camp near the Whitewater where some sort of disturbance had ended in the shooting of a man at the camp. Lang was told that a person named James Anderson had fired the shots through the door of the building and then had fled the scene. As Lang was hunting for Anderson along the road, he saw a man answering Anderson's description, and hoping to make a quiet arrest, stopped and offered him a ride. Lang later said he thought the wind had blown open his coat so that his badge was showing, and Anderson opened fire. While Lang was lying in the road suffering from injuries that would result in his death, Anderson escaped. Lang was taken to Bethesda Hospital in Cincinnati, where he died a couple of days later. He made a deathbed statement positively identifying his assailant. Witnessing his statement were former Dearborn County Sheriff and well-known private detective Ora Slater, along with Howard Shearer and Circuit Court Judge Charles Lowe. Anderson was arrested and found guilty and sentenced to death. A detailed appeal of the sentence was refused by the Indiana Supreme Court in 1933. Meanwhile, Herman Lang's widow Mamie was appointed to fill out his unexpired term as sheriff, the first and only woman to hold that office in Dearborn County. Prohibition came to an end finally in early 1934, but the distilleries in Lawrenceburg were ready well ahead of time. The amendment, which would nullify prohibition, was well on its way to acceptance when distilling started at Old Quaker, the former Squibb plant. And by late December of 1933, they announced that more than 100 girls were busily bottling their product. The O'Shaughnessy brothers had already reincorporated the James Walsh & Company distillery. The U.S. Customs Department announced a new substation in Lawrenceburg to handle the anticipated volume of imports and exports by the Joseph E. Seagram Company of Canada, which had purchased the former Rossville distillery. Prohibition, the noble experiment that failed, was over, and life in Lawrenceburg and Dearborn County returned to normal.